From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 352, recorded live Thursday, January 3rd, 2013. This episode is brought to you by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support, online at telerik.com. And by franklins.net, training developers to work smarter, and now offering GesturePack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Damian Edwards about making open source work at Microsoft with SignalR.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Talking to my buddy Damian Edwards. How's it going, sir?
I'm very well. How are you?
Very well. So, congratulations on SignalR being an officially supported Microsoft thing. Your guys' weekend project, you and David Fowler, is now like a real thing. When you say file new project in the Visual Studio 20.2 version of ASP.NET, it's there's a SignalR choice.
That's right. Yeah, we have an item template in that release now. So I think that makes us part of the family more than anything. If you have a template, then we're shipping you. So.
Mm-hmm. Does that seem more like official than the other stuff that you have actually shipped? Like you've shipped web forms, and that's like official and awesome, but somehow this is your baby.
Yeah, I mean, this really is my baby. I mean, I joined the team coming up to 3 years ago, and I actually joined the team just before .NET 4 went out the door. And so .NET 4.5, I was heavily involved in that release. A lot of the features in web forms and core ASP.NET were, I sort of oversaw from the program management side. But this is the first thing that, I was basically there from the very conception, even before it was part of our, official product roadmap. It was, as you said, it was literally a side project of a couple of us, and over time it became popular as a what we call a moonlighting project, and now I've seen it right through to almost the 1.0. The 1.0 will be out very soon, so it's been really exciting and a really great experience, actually.
How often does that happen, where Microsoft will take something and that is open source and ship it?
I honestly don't know. I can't think of another example. In
Knockout,
this group.
Maybe?
Knockout is close, except Knockout is not produced by Microsoft. It's still a personal project of Steve Sanderson.
Well, that's a good point. Why did you choose to do this then? You could have just left it, right?
We could have. We could have just said, no, we're going to continue. I mean, to talk about what sort of... We talked about this originally with management, and sort of the understanding at the time was that you guys continue this as a moonlighting project with the understanding that when the roadmap kind of opens up, once .NET 4.5 has finished, we'd be interested in looking at making this part of the product because we think it's really important to the web development story moving forward. And we never had any problem with that. I mean, we obviously, there's a lot of benefits to being a project that's produced and supported by Microsoft. I mean, I'm sitting in one half of our team room at the moment. We're in a fairly new building right now. We moved a couple of months ago. Previously, mm-hmm. we had a team room with all of the SignalR team in it together. Now we're split across two rooms. So David Fowler and I sit in this one room, and directly opposite the hall here is a room with five or six people in it, and we're all working on SignalR. And we even have more people. We have people on the perf team and the stress team working on SignalR basically full-time as well. So we have maybe 10 to 12 people at the moment working on SignalR, which we couldn't have possibly imagined if this was just a moonlighting project.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, to assemble that many people into a team in the open source world and do it even close to full-time would be impossible.
Yeah, that's exactly. So that's one of the huge benefits, right? And then we get other benefits like localization is now something you can do. We have a user education team whose job is to do documentation, which is always a really big problem on open source projects. Who's going to write good quality documentation? Mm-hmm. So we get all these resources and other people and teams available to us to work on this because it's now basically just part of ASP.NET.
Okay. So you've got a bunch of people working on it now. You've got people from different departments. You've got QA, localization, stress. You've got user documentation, but this thing was a regular old two guys on GitHub project, some
right.
months ago. How do you get all these Microsoft employees to commit to that random GitHub repository? Or did you have to like sell your soul and make some change to make this happen?
That's a very good question. So as part of the process of sort of changing this from being a project that just David and I worked on to being something that the Microsoft, the ASP.NET team works on, we actually assigned all the project, the copyright associated with the code, et cetera, over to Microsoft OpenTech. So Microsoft OpenTech was that subsidiary, wholly owned subsidiary set up by Microsoft in the last year or two to do open source work for Microsoft, but still have it be sort of within the Microsoft realm. Whereas the other organization people might be familiar with is Outer Curve, formerly the Codeplex Foundation, which is not a company. It is an organization, as far as I understand, and it is completely separate from Microsoft. And so things like NuGet, which are in Outer Curve, the code isn't actually owned by Microsoft. It's owned by Outer Curve. Microsoft people contribute to it, but it's not owned by Microsoft. Whereas SignalR is in Microsoft OpenTech, which is the same as ASP.NET MVC, Web API, Razor, Entity Framework. And so we sort of fit within the same sort of model as them.
Mm-hmm. So there is the SignalR open source project that I could commit to, I can build, I can fork, and I could do stuff with. And then there's Microsoft yep. SignalR that I ship with Visual Studio.
And exactly, or on NuGet even.
Okay. And the SignalR that ships with Visual Studio now is supported. I mean, it's open source, but it is also licensed as a Microsoft product. And it is, if I'm a big corporation, do I have to go and say, oh, gosh, I can't ship open source?
That's a question we get quite a lot, actually. And the truth is, because as you said, we basically, the Microsoft entity takes the open source code and repackages it essentially and ships it as a Microsoft component. I mean, if you look at the assemblies that we ship, they're signed with the Microsoft code signing key. So I mean, we ship them as a Microsoft release, and that includes our nightly builds that we push up via MyGet. And so they are a true Microsoft release. And so they come with a EULA. When you get them via NuGet, when you get one of the official Microsoft releases, there is a EULA in the NuGet package. And that, you know, stipulates the terms that are usually associated with using something from Microsoft. And part of that is a support sort of arrangement. And so product support services, or whatever they're called today, CSS, PSS, will provide support for this product as it's shipped by a supported Microsoft team. And so, no, you don't have to worry about shipping open source in terms of support from Microsoft as long as you're using the thing that we actually shipped. If you go and get the source code from GitHub and build it yourself, you're on your own.
Right. It's just like I use the example of Firefox or Chrome, which are all both used in corporate environments. There's like Chromium, the open source Chrome that I could go and build and run myself, but I would be on my own if I did that.
Right.
But there's also, I think more interestingly, there's also libraries downstream. I mean, the fact that Chrome is open source is one thing. The fact that Chrome uses and sits on a whole pile of open source is more interesting. And what I think is interesting, what I wanted to talk to you about today, was that SignalR, this is, I don't know, maybe hopefully the boss won't listen, but maybe he will, screw it. SignalR is a Microsoft open source project run the way two developers would want to do it without any bosses. You have your unit test the way you would do it. You have your environment set up the way that you would do it with no pressure from Microsoft. You see what I'm saying? You guys did it on the weekend.
Yep.
So it would be as if, you know, a couple of Microsoft guys want to write a project that's going to be JavaScript and CLR, and there's no bosses. So what I want to know is what libraries you use, what environments you use, what services, build systems, because there were no bosses. But now you've snuck it in. Are you still using those same libraries?
That's a really good question. So I think, you know, because that we, you know, David and I, you know, we love open source. David especially does a lot of stuff in the open source community, helping out with Mono, getting stuff running on that sort of platform and things. Obviously, he was heavily involved in NuGet. We started on GitHub, and so we're staying on GitHub. We have a really great following on GitHub, so that was one thing that is probably different to if we were started in Microsoft. If we were to start today, a brand new .NET open source project as part of this team, it would most likely be in Codeplex, and there's nothing wrong with that, but we started in GitHub, and so we're going to stay in GitHub. We have a community there. Secondly, we used a whole bunch of other open source libraries, not actually in our code per se. Like, we haven't really incorporated stuff into our code at all. But we, as part of the build process and as part of producing samples and those type of things, we use quite a lot of open source libraries. And there's certainly some interesting developments recently, which we can talk about, which I'm quite proud of, that we've actually got up and running as part of our build process. So we kind of brought a lot of that, I guess, baggage across when we became an official ASP.NET thing. And, of course, there is a process involved internally to get approval for, or to at least notify that you're using certain types of open source for specific purposes. And I will say again, there is a difference between us using open source software to produce the library, that is what we term internal use, versus redistributing open source as part of a product. Mm-hmm. I guess the difference is with the ASP.NET templates, we actually redistribute things like jQuery, jQuery UI, and Knockout. So we're actually taking those open source libraries and reshipping them in a Microsoft product. Whereas in Signalr, we don't do that. We do use a whole bunch of open source libraries in our samples, but we don't ship them. They just live up in the source code. Mm-hmm. Or we reference them via NuGet. So technically, we're not actually redistributing them. Okay. And then when we actually produce Signalr, we do a bunch of testing, and we use a lot of we use some really interesting open source libraries and platforms for that testing, which is kind of cool as well. So there's okay. a process we have to go through, but a part of getting the benefits of Microsoft is you also have to adhere to some of these things, and it hasn't really been a problem.
Okay, so we're a couple minutes into the podcast here, and I'm realizing that there may be people that don't know what Signalr is. Briefly, it is a real time communications library. It's an abstraction over WebSockets and long polling and forever frames and all the things that one uses to do real-time communication. And it's basically kind of like the real-time aspects of Node, except in ASP.NET. And it consists of a DLL on the server side that has some modules and some handlers and some listeners. And on the client side, it consists of some JavaScript. Is there anything else that ships with Signalr?
So we, on the client side, we have a dependency on jQuery. And so why we don't actually redistribute jQuery with Signalr, I mean, Signalr is a NuGet release. We do have item templates, which are included in the ASP.NET update that we've also shipped in. But Signalr itself isn't redistributing jQuery. It's being redistributed by that other package. And so we depend on jQuery. We also depend on JSON.NET on the server side. So we have a reference to that. So your project will have to get that from NuGet, and of course our NuGet package has a dependency on that. So NuGet does that for you.
Right. But now that ASP.NET Web API, which is the services stuff, has JSON.NET dependencies, that's okay, or not okay, but it's more common. That is our preferred JSON serializer now.
That's right. Yeah. And so I mean, again, most of the stuff is usually pluggable. Our jQuery dependency is hard at the moment in the client, because they give us just a lot of stuff that we don't want to have to rewrite. And the other thing we depend on from a runtime perspective is Owen, which I think you spoke about recently in another podcast.
But you should get a little bit into that, because people don't know what Owen is or why it's going to become increasingly important.
Yeah. We should probably do a talk on that at some point, or a podcast on that, actually.
Let's do it.
The Open Web Interfaces for .NET, and it's basically a contract between a web server, so that is the physical bit of software that deals with taking stuff, bytes off the wire, and then formulating them into things that look like HTTP requests, and then sending data back, and then the web frameworks that want to sit on top of those things. So this is kind of the layer that sits in between a web servers or hosts, and then web frameworks upon which you write your applications. With ASP.NET, traditionally, we think of ASP.NET being joined at the hip with IIS, which is in some ways true. And so Owen is an effort to create web frameworks and a structure for creating web frameworks that can sort of coordinate and sit on common hosts through a common contract. And so Signalr actually takes a dependency on Owen. We don't talk to ASP.NET or System Web directly. The Signalr core actually is basically hosted based on this Owen contract. And then that means we can sit on top of System Web, we can sit on top of HTTP Listener, we can sit on top of custom web servers, as long as all those things know how to talk Owen.
Okay. So this is allowing SignalR to communicate with anything. Can you self-host SignalR?
You can. At the moment, the self-host story is a little bit manual because Owen itself is sort of developing with SignalR. I mean, Owen has been around for a few years, but in terms of Owen's use by Microsoft packages, it's kind of got to a tipping point now. We said, well, no, SignalR is going to be the first package, the first library we ship that actually requires Owen to run. So we don't have a native system web host per se, which we used to have. We now only have an Owen host, and that means that you need to also have the Owen system web adapter or package in your project in order for SignalR to run in ASP.NET. Now, of course, we do some nice NuGet tricks to make sure all that just sort of happens as the default story. But if you peel away the layers, yeah, we just sit on top of Owen. So you can sit on top of HTTP Listener, you can sit on top of Kayak or Firefly or whatever custom web server you like.
And does it work in mono? You'd mentioned that David is a fan of mono.
It does, yeah. We even have a mono CI server set up on CodeBetter. So David is a big advocate of trying to support the mono community, and so he does a lot of personal effort to ensure that the code, the SignalR code base, will compile for use on mono. So we don't ship a mono library. We don't ship a DLL that will work on mono, but you can go to the GitHub repository for SignalR, and there is a make file, and there is a mono solution file, so you can open it and build it.
Now, there are things in SignalR that work really, really well on Windows Server 2012 or on Windows 8, like WebSockets. How do you light those things up while still building and working on mono?
Abstractions. Classic sort of software engineer's answer of, you know, any problem can be solved with another layer of abstraction. So Owen kind of encapsulates all of that for us. Essentially, we rely on the Owen host to give us everything we need in order to do, you know, to get an HTTP request, in order to tell the server to upgrade that to WebSockets. And if we're sitting on top of a host that can't do that, then the Owen sort of contract or the Owen host will tell us that WebSockets is not available. And so we won't try it. And so basically, as I said, the SignalR core library has no concept of ASP.NET in terms of ASP.NET core system web. It just deals with, hey, I have an I request, and that I request was populated by Owen, and that's all I can do.
So you are actually relying on Owen to do that, and even though Owen is a little layer of abstraction, it doesn't affect your performance.
Yeah, correct. So, I mean, obviously, one of our three major tenets with SignalR is performance. We have sort of these three tenets we try and do all of our feature development round, which is simplicity, reach, and performance. And with a real-time library, performance is critical, and so we've been very careful to ensure that anything we do here doesn't adversely affect performance in a way that we think, you know, makes it not worthwhile. So we get a lot of benefits by using Owen, especially for people who are doing things like self-host and they want to be able to run multiple frameworks side by side. Perhaps they want to use Nancy, SignalR, and Web API within the same process. Owen makes that type of thing really, really easy, and you can even share common code that runs in the Owen pipeline called Owen Middleware, so that when a request comes into your application, before it hits one of those three frameworks, you can have common code that runs, and even code that runs on the way out as well. Doing that with ASP.NET, if, for instance, you have an ASP.NET application, and then you have Nancy running in that ASP.NET application, that's a lot harder. So Owen really makes that type of thing really simple, but performance is still very important to us, and I'm very grateful we have a great performance team to help us with those sort of things.
How do you balance those things? Because from an open source project's perspective that was done, you know, outside of Microsoft, you could say those are really great goals, like we're going to work in mono, we're going to support Owen, which means people can use web servers that are not IIS or host, you know, or self-host, but then you move it into Microsoft, wouldn't or doesn't the evil overlords say, you know, those were really lofty goals, but now you're ours?
That question comes up a bit. Even internally, we talk about those type of things, obviously. At the end of the day, our team is like a business unit, and we're making decisions and trade-offs based on, you know, a perceived investment and return and those type of things. But a lot of these things are customer-driven. I mean, we have a lot of asks from And, you know, we have internal customers as well, not just external customers. We have other groups at Microsoft who are very interested in this real-time web aspect, who want to be able to use sort of the real-time web library that Microsoft introduces. And they have their own requirements. And maybe they don't host on IIS in their infrastructure for whatever reason. But we have a lot of customers, both internal and external, who want to be able to do self-host, whether it's in a Windows service or a console app. They want to be able to run Web API and SignalR together in the same process without sort of traditional ASP.NET being involved. And so a lot of it's driven by customer demand. This isn't really just sort of lofty, oh, we would like to get to this eventual position where, you know, we're like Ruby or, you know, Node or whatever it might be. We have real customers asking real questions about how they can use our stuff together. And Owen helps us solve quite a few of those problems.
Do you think that at some point some boss will decide that that's not in our best interests, or does it depend on the boss? I mean, like, I know Hunter, who's your boss and my boss who we share, seems pretty cool, but if he gets hit by a bus, somebody could change their mind.
Maybe. I haven't really ever thought about that, to tell you the truth. I mean,
really? I think about this stuff all the time. What's wrong with you?
Seems to be extremely logical in how they choose things. And
yeah.
We've been given quite a lot of autonomy in the direction we're taking SignalR. I think at the end of the day, we all have common goals. We're just trying to make our customers happy. And we want to build cool stuff.
Want them to do it on Windows, right? Or at least in Azure.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, we're part of the Windows Azure group. And over time, you know, we get measured to a certain extent by how successful we can make the Windows Azure platform. You know, no secret there, right? We're a business unit. That's how we're going to make our money.
Sure. No, it's not a secret. It's totally appropriate.
We have a lot of features that are geared around lighting up and sort of cloud hosting scenarios, which, you know, sort of our scale out features and things like that.
Yeah.
But still, if customers are asking us, saying, hey, we want to be able to use these things together in this way, and at the moment you're making it hard, well, we still want those customers to host in Azure. You know, that would be really good for us. I don't see them as conflicting interests, I guess is the point. I still think that anything we can do to make customers happy using our libraries will ultimately endear them to using other parts of our stack. And if they don't, that doesn't matter either, because, you know, we still love people using our libraries, and they'll either be on Windows, or they'll be using our tools, or they'll be helping the community. So there's always some benefit, even if it's not, you know, strictly tangible.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. What kind of open source things are you using, or what kind of build systems do you use? Like, do we use TeamCity, or what are we doing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we do use TeamCity. We have a couple of TeamCity servers. We have a public TeamCity server, which I maintain, which is up at ci.signalr.net. And you can just click on the login as guest link there. And that runs our public CI server. So you can see the status of the current build. We build the dev branch, which is where we do our active development. And if there is a release branch current, because we're actually preparing for a release, then we'll be building that as well. And we have a sort of a standard CI build that builds unit tests, builds and does unit tests. And we have a full build that does a lot more of our test automation stuff, which is where a lot more of our open source use as part of the build process comes in. So we recently got Test Swarm set up. Have you heard of this before, Test Swarm?
No, it sounds good, though, because it has Swarm in the name.
It has Swarm, right? So TestSwarm was built by the jQuery team, and it's a library to help with distributed browser testing. So the idea is, if you have a JavaScript library, or basically anything, a web page, if you have a set of tests that you can run by hitting a URL, and you want to run that across lots of different browsers, you need some type of harness to coordinate that thing, right? You need something that defines what browsers to run, something that tracks if the tests have run or not, and what passed and what failed, and that is TestSwarm. So we use TestSwarm in conjunction with BrowserStack. So BrowserStack is a paid service, which is run at browserstack.com, which hosts virtual machines of browsers cross-platform. So they have iPad emulators, they have Android phones, they have obviously Windows, all browsers running on Windows, Linux, and Mac. And, you know, we pay them a monthly fee, and then they have an API we can use to sort of remotely drive these VMs running lots of different browsers to hit a specific deployment of our tests, which are written in QUnit. And QUnit is another open source library from the jQuery team for doing JavaScript unit testing. So we have these three things working together. We have QUnit, which we write our JavaScript tests in order to test the signal or JavaScript client. We have BrowserStack, which is a paid service that lets us have VMs to run, you know, lots of different browsers in. Then we have TestSwarm, which is kind of the harness that coordinates all these things together. So if you actually go up to testswarm.signalr.net, you can actually see the jobs that are running in our TestSwarm cloud, which is kind of cool. And you'll see a whole bunch of browsers there. You can see how many runs have been on each browser. And if you drill into the projects menu and choose Signalr, you can actually see a matrix of all the tests that are currently running and what their pass rates are. So we recently got this set up. It actually requires Linux. So we're actually running, I think it's Python on Linux with a bit of Node to integrate TestSwarm, Apache, and the BrowserStack API. So we have that running up in Azure on a Linux VM and an Ubuntu VM. And we basically publish jobs to this TestSwarm server from our TeamCity build script. So a lot of moving parts, but you know, the outcome is that we have a really nice distributed sort of test architecture for doing browser automation testing.
Does it kind of quote unquote just work? I mean, it sounds complicated. It sounds a little kind of Rube Goldbergian. But do you have to sweat it?
It's funny because I had read about this thing maybe 18 months ago. If you go to BrowserStack, there is a page there where there's actually a published white paper that someone in the jQuery team wrote about using the BrowserStack API with TestSwarm and QUnit. And I was like, oh, that's amazing. And I always had that in the back of my mind that when I got to doing, when the team needed to do sort of distributed browser testing, this is what we do. Now, we do have some existing tools within the ASP.NET team. Some of them are open, like the LTAF, the Lightweight Test Automation Framework. But I felt that this was a more complete and sort of open testing infrastructure that I would really like open source projects like Signalr, which have a heavy browser dependency, to use. And so I kind of I pushed this quite hard internally, and we've just recently got this set up. And we were lucky enough to have someone on the team that has quite a bit of Linux experience, and so he was able to get this up and running within a couple of days using the integration libraries that the jQuery team has published and a bit of the help that they've published as well. So I wouldn't say it was, I mean, if I had tried to do it personally, I know basically nothing about Linux, so it would have been a lot hard. I would have had to learn, you know, how to set up Ubuntu and how to remote in and do all that type of stuff. But because we had someone on the team who actually had a bit of Linux experience, it became quite a lot easier.
And it's just an appliance. It just works. So this seems like a pretty great thing.
Once it's set up, it just works. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you do stuff like this, does it infect the rest of the team? Like if you have some successful service, whether it's running in Ubuntu or not, doesn't matter. It does. It serves a purpose and it works great. Do other parts of the ASP.NET team say, oh, I really want to use that too?
So that's a good question. We have a really good culture of knowledge sharing in the group, which we use a mechanism called brown bags. The brown bags are these idea of a lunchtime meeting where you bring your lunch, and then over the lunch hour, someone will sort of just do a very casual demonstration of something they thought was cool. And so we certainly plan on doing a brown bag internally about how we set up TestSwarm with TeamCity and QUnit and BrowserStack to get this really nice test automation set up. So until that happens, we're probably not going to see much leakage. But once that happens, I wouldn't be surprised if other teams look at this and go, hey, this is something that we could probably benefit from as well.
Do you spend a lot of time talking to lawyers and convincing them that these are all good ideas? Or do you just do it and you count on your Missouri?
You know, so we have a great boss, you and I. So as I said before, there's a process. I'm looking at, there's an internal website I'm looking at right now, which sort of lists all the requests I've made for use of open source software for internal use. And so I can literally sort of look at this list and say, oh, well, I put in a notification saying that we're using the jQuery Transform library, we're using jQuery Cookie, we're using JSON 2, we're using TestSwarm, we're using the MS Build Community Tasks, because the open source policy of our particular business unit is that there are a number of pre-approved open source licenses. And if you want to use an open source library that is under that license, one of these licenses, you have to just notify using this particular internal tool. And so basically every time we use anything that's open source, I have to go and create an entry in this list, and that's essentially the process. I don't have to worry about anything else. Now, some things like Linux weren't on that list. And in that case, I had to go up and sort of get approval through my management chain, but that wasn't much of an issue.
Okay. Well, that's nice. The idea that if it's under this license, just FYI,
yeah,
makes things a lot simpler. We need to make that like throughout Microsoft. There's so many other teams where it's like, oh, I want to use foo.js and, you know, I need to write a 12-page paper about it to tell the lawyers.
Yeah, I can't speak for other teams, obviously. I mean, every business unit, I think, has different guidelines on open source use, but it seems that the wheels are turning such that there's becoming a lot more common policy. But at the end of the day, the advice internally is always, you know, speak to your LCA representative.
I wonder, do you think it's Guthrie? Like, why is our org so into this? Like, I just feel like I'm very happy with the way open source has gone. I mean, since the last 5 years, you know, I would tell people that I went to Microsoft to work on open source and we continue to work on open source and it's working very well. But there's still all these kind of nightmare discussions about other organizations. It just doesn't work smoothly. I mean, executive air cover is helpful, but I'm trying to figure out how we can get other organizations to get it.
I think thinking back, like why it's the case and what happened, because we shipped open source libraries with our product, like when we made the decision to ship jQuery with our product, I think that created a whole bunch of groundwork that just had to be completed by our sort of legal department in order to make that a reality. And every time we said, okay, well, that worked. I mean, that was a lot of work. It wasn't something that we just decided and it happened overnight. There was a lot of legal work that had to happen. And then with every new library that we decided we wanted to reship with our templates, we had to go through and, you know, refine that work, perhaps change the rules and set up more process. And because we've been through that process time and time again, we now have a, you know, a really good basis and understanding about the framework through which we can use open source in this division. Now, other business units perhaps haven't been through that. They haven't redistributed open source software before. So maybe that's one of the reasons we have a perceived head start in this area. I'm not sure.
Yeah. That's a good question. I don't know. But I think it also is us pushing, right? I mean, me and Mads and Phil, Hack, and all the different people in the organization that just dig open source. For some reason, we got ourselves into a situation where we had, you know, a majority of people who thought this was important. So the bosses were hearing it at like every minute.
Right.
The constant pressure couldn't have hurt.
No, couldn't have hurt at all, I think.
No. Well, this is cool. Well, I'm glad that you're able to do this and that you're able to make open source happen, both in the consumption aspects of open source and the production aspects of open source. And now, you know, like you said, we've shipped MVC and that a lot of structure was put in place to make that happen. And now we're shipping SignalR and we're using things like Knockout. That just means that whatever the next thing that we do in open source, whatever that might be, is just going to be that much smoother of a process.
Exactly.
Cool. Well, thanks for talking to me today. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.